Fanning. Weekends on 2FM.
This week, American food processor Heinz revealed its first bottle of Mars Edition ketchup. They spell it M-A-R-Z, but they are talking M-A-R-S. The condiment was created using tomatoes that were grown in extreme temperatures and soil conditions similar to those found on the Red Planet. The scientists behind the delicious development have said that the success of this Mars Edition ketchup is an exciting prospect for possible long-term celestial food production. I kid you not. So basically, I suppose the big question of the day is, will we be eating burgers on Mars anytime soon? Well, engineer, performer, writer, doctor of science and all-round space nut, Niamh Shaw is on the line. So tell me, Niamh, how did you become a space nut? No, seriously, let's start again. First of all, where are you, by the way?
I'm in New Mexico, Dave. How are you?
Right. Have you met Walter White?
Oh, I wish. Are you a Breaking Bad fan as well?
Oh, my God, I thought you'd say who's that. Very good. I'm very impressed. Are you anywhere near Albuquerque, are you?
Yeah, I just asked, actually. I'm 2 hours south of Albuquerque right now.
Right, okay. So, obviously in New Mexico, you're on a bit of a road trip.
Yeah.
I think immediately, Niamh Shaw, New Mexico, must be space-related.
It has to be. Obviously, their two things are intertwined, you know. yeah, of course. Yeah, that's what I'm doing.
Oh, you're not giving us any secrets.
Oh, no. Yeah, no, I'm here. I came over for a few days. And so yesterday I checked out the VLA, which is like the Very Large Array. So did you see the movie Contact with Jodie Foster?
I did. And you know something? I thought that was, with John Hurt, more to the point.
Yeah.
He was amazing. Because he had a second one when the first one blew up. Do you remember?
That's right, yeah. And an up-and-coming, nobody knew who he was, Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah, that's right.
He was the love interest, the priest.
Yeah, indeed, that's right, yeah. Anyway, listen, let's take a look at what we want to talk about here and then we might get back to New Mexico. So, space ketchup. Love it.
Yeah.
That's the name of my next band. Okay, where did the concept of space ketchup actually come from?
Well, I think Heinz were looking at it and they wanted to come up with a concept of ketchup that they could prove that it was of a good enough quality that it would meet their exacting standards of what good Heinz ketchup is. So the idea being that if they're able to grow tomatoes
in you're in New Mexico.
Yeah, you see what I did there? Yeah, if they're I can't help it, it's infectious. Yeah, yeah. If they're trying to grow they were trying to show that you can grow tomatoes and they're of exactly the same quality in conditions that are Mars-like than, you know, growing them on Earth. So this is part of a study that took 9 months in an institute, the Aldrin Space Institute in Florida, where they simulated conditions, the same temperature and water conditions, as if these plants were growing on Mars. So 9 months they did it, and they grew their tomatoes and they made ketchup, and it met all the standards. So what they're basically saying is that, you know, if we focus our attention and we do enough good experiments on Earth, if we have to send humans for long-term missions, particularly to places like Mars where there is a soil, that there is nothing stopping us from achieving that. So
Is this the first time that Martian simulated conditions have been used for growing food? No.
No, sure. My own Mars mission. So, you know, we talked about this many times when I was in the desert. We're back to this again. one of our experiments was growing. We tried to germinate spinach under this kind of pink light, and we had a water solution which was seeded with the same nutrients for soil, and we managed to germinate them. And then in an article that we're kind of, you know, talking about, this Guardian article, there was a guy, a scientist in that, who also did MDRS, or the Mars Desert Research Station. He was part of Crew 143, the 30 before me, and he also successfully grew vegetables in those conditions, you know. So it is possible. You just got to do the research.
Okay, well then the whole project, even from years ago, is to look at long-term food harvesting. So why is successful agriculture, or is it, so difficult on Mars?
Okay, so there's a few things. So firstly, you know, plants, you know, they use carbon dioxide and they use light, and then they have a thing called chlorophyll in their leaves, and they're able then to convert that into energy and they give off oxygen. Now, so in order for that to happen, you also have to have decent soil. And the problem is that the soil on Mars is full of a compound called perchlorates, and perchlorates is basically salt, really salt. So that's the first issue. So it makes thinking about trying to grow plants and stuff on Mars very difficult without kind of removing that. But if we were to do it long term, we could, you know. So like the scene from The Martian where, you know, Mark Watney is trying to grow his potatoes, like that's not actually you know, that's not actually true. We still have an awful lot more research to do. But, you know, by using kind of artificial light and using water and kind of adapting the soil conditions, we can do it.
Okay, so, but like, what about the intensity of the sun, which might be needed in certain ways that we can get
that's
here or
it,
not?
Yeah.
What about the gravitational pull? Do all those things come into effect?
Yeah, they would. Like, you know, so like, you know, we have great sunlight here because of our position in relation to the sun or our location to the sun. So Mars is further out. So, you know, the sun's going to be a lot weaker. The atmosphere is a lot colder because of that. So, you know, average temperatures are kind of like 50 degrees less than here. So, you know, minus 50, minus 60 would be an average day. So, you know, they're not conditions that plants on Earth are, you know, going to adapt to. But, you know, there's been lots of studies of growing plants on the International Space Station. So they've shown, you know, they just recently kind of grew their chilies and they were sharing them for their meals and they've been able to grow lettuce. And so that kind of has overcome the gravity problem because there's less of a sensation of gravity on the International Space Station than there is on Mars. Mars is a gravitational force, one third that of Earth. But of course, the International Space Station, they don't experience the sensation of gravity at all on that. So you just got to tweak. And what's particularly interesting about this study is that it's a longer term studies. This was a 9-month one, whereas a lot of the previous studies, like on those simulated missions, they've all been quite short. But you know, they've been able to successfully grow quinoa. I don't know, or quinoa. I don't know how people pronounce that, but quinoa, I think. Peas, rocket salad, you know, barley and onions. And, you know, on the International Space Station, as I'm saying, like they're regularly growing lettuce now that they can add to their meals. So the more we can do this and kind of keep these people alive in extreme conditions, the better. Because, you know, for these supposed missions to Mars, we have to find ways of giving them fresh food over long periods of time. So that's not going to happen.
All right. Would that answer the question, like, what's the point of all of this? You know, why do we grow food on Mars? Are you saying that, like, you can only give the food systems in the space station would only last, say, about a year or something, and it needs to last longer?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, so in order to get to Mars, right, so you have to wait for the orbits of Earth and the orbits of Mars to get as close as possible. And when you do that, it means that you'll get there in 7 months. So how do you keep really fresh food alive in 7 months? You can't really, unless it's frozen or freeze dried or, you know, shelf stable. So that's fine. But long term, you're going to have people go to Mars. And even if it's a turnaround mission, it's going to take them another 2 years to get back because the orbit of Earth and Mars are different. So in order for it to line up again, you have to wait another 2 years for them to come back. So how do you keep them? How do you give them fresh food in that time? And the only answer really is encourage them to grow their own food. So that's why these kind of studies are important, because if we are genuinely looking at this idea of firstly having, you know, a research station on Mars, and some big billionaires like Elon Musk, they have these big grand designs to colonize Mars in the next kind of 50 to 100 years. If we're actually going to do that, we need to get down to the basics, which is like, what food can we grow in these extreme environments to keep these people alive?
Okay. Well, then there are problems, but not the ones faced by Matt Damon, you say, in the movie The Martian, even though he had terrible trouble growing his buds, whatever he was growing that time. Yeah, that's not real, is it?
No, because the perchlorates, which is in the soil of Mars, you can't really grow. Yes, you know yourself. Yeah. So perchlorates are just like these. It's like a salt,
right,
you know. And so that's not going to be.
Okay, well then
you know,
the obvious question is here. I'm
going
to ask the why question again, because do you think that humans will colonize the red planet at some stage? I mean, is it as inevitable as Elon Musk might like to think?
I don't know, Dave. To be honest with you, I don't know. I get asked this a lot. I think that it's quite complicated. So, like, we need oxygen to live, right? So, you know, we kind of take it for granted because it's everywhere around us all the time. So if we're to live on Mars long term, you know, do we want to live underground, you know, with our oxygen being pumped in? Or do we want to kind of live a life where we can go outside and play? And so Elon Musk and some of his kind of the people that agree with him, they believe that we should do something called terraform Mars, which means that completely change the atmosphere of Mars so that it one day will be producing oxygen. And that's where it kind of gets, that's where a lot of people kind of part ways on it, because ethically you're kind of entering into a zone where do we have the right as humans to land on another planet and completely change its ecosystem for us?
Yeah.
Isn't that what a parasite does? So, you know, I'm not so sure, and I think it's a really complex question. Really, really complex
question.
Okay, what
about that thing?
And I think it's one that
was it called Perseverance? Is that still up there?
Yeah, the Perseverance rover is up there.
The
that's
rover,
right. So,
yeah.
So that was a rover that was, you know, that landed on Mars in February, and there are some great experiments on board that actually are helping us understand how could we keep humans alive on Mars. So there's two kind of main ones that they're that they have on that. Like there's, I think there's 37 experiments on the Perseverance rover, but there's two that are related directly to kind of human survival. So one is this machine that takes in carbon dioxide and through a chemical process is able to release oxygen. So that's called MOXIE, and that's a really important one because it shows that we can actually take that atmosphere of Mars and turn it into an oxygen atmosphere under, you know, under, you know, in a set space. Like you couldn't, if you just did it outside, you know, unless you were right beside it, you wouldn't be able to breathe the oxygen. And then the second one is like a weather project, and that's actually a European project, and it's just trying to figure out like what are the weather patterns like on Mars. So that will give us an idea of, you know, what are the extremes, what are the, you know, how many kind of wind storms are there, how much variation is there in temperature, so that long term we know this is kind of the weather forecasting for Mars.
You know, and see if we can do
it.
Perseverance is just, it's if it's addressing the challenges of future human expeditions, etc. Is it looking back, I mean, what do we know about, have we had any definitive, like, was there life on Mars? Has there been life on Mars? And is Perseverance going to tell us?
That's what Perseverance, its main mission is to kind of answer that question. So it has lots of different, it has lots of different pieces of equipment on board, like different lasers and different pieces of equipment that look at different wavelengths of light to see if they can pick up life forms. So they landed purposely on this basin, this delta, where, you know, so on Earth, their areas where there's kind of a collection of water, and what happens is over time you get a buildup of silt and all these things in the bottom of these deposits. So it's believed that Mars once had running water on it, and so it's all dried up. And so if they go to these deltas, if there was life there, or, you know, some sort of living systems, it would be in that silt. So they're in those basins on purpose, you know. And then they're also taking samples, like they're actually physically taking samples, and Mars has already successfully done one. And then we, the European Space Agency, we're going to help them with a sample return mission. So we're going to land, pick up their samples, and then shoot them back to Earth, and then drop them down as that spacecraft passes.
There's a text
I know.
Here,
I mean, it's really complicated stuff.
It's from David Bowie. He says, is there life on... Oh, no, sorry. Okay. What else is going on out there in the world, Niamh? Because, like, what about this NASA DART launch, which sounds like the plot to Blinkin' Armageddon or something. Tell me about the NASA DART launch.
Yeah, I know, right? So they launched, they all launched a spacecraft on Tuesday night. It was 6:20 a.m. Irish time, Tuesday night, Wednesday morning, called the Double Asteroid Redirection Experiment.
Test.
And so what they So basically there are asteroids, you know, in our solar system all the time, and they have an orbit that's different from our orbit. So sometimes, you know, so they're approaching the sun, they go in and then they go out again, and sometimes they're quite close to Earth. So there is a whole area of space, space sector called planetary defense, and it's their job to kind of look at asteroids and see if there's any threats coming our way. So if there are any other threats coming our way, what will we do in such an instance? Because, you know, that's what happened to the poor dinosaurs 6 million years ago. So an asteroid hit Earth and it caused mass destruction. So what can we do? So there's been a theory for a long time that you can deflect the orbit of an asteroid just by gently giving it a little nudge. So that's what this mission is about. It's about testing the idea of that. So there's an asteroid, it's not very big, it's like 390 metres across, called Didymos, and it has a little moonlet called Dimorphos. And so this spacecraft is heading towards that orbit. And when it gets there, which I think is in September next year, 2022,
it's going to give it a nudge.
They're literally going to... They're going to give it a nudge, and it's going to just, they predict that it's going to just take it off course about 1%. And then in a couple of years' time, there is an ESA mission, that's us, called Hera, and they're going to go there and see how much did it deviate and what did that impact look like, so that we know that this will work.
If it's going to do this, it's doing this for a reason, and I presume the reason is a good one and not just an experiment. So does this, as we speak, and the trajectory, etc., does this asteroid currently pose any actual threat to Earth?
No, not at all. No, not at all. So this is just a test one. There's nothing anywhere, you know, there's nothing kind of, we don't have to worry about anything. Like there was one last October that kind of got, I think, within about 20,000 kilometres of us, but even still, you know, it was fine. And then also our atmosphere is very good at pushing and keeping these things out of our atmosphere, you know, of Earth too. You know, that's because our atmosphere is pressure.
Okay.
But yeah, like if the asteroid is big enough, we can't overcome things. So there's no threat. This isn't that, you know, this asteroid is coming our way. It's just to show that experimentally in this instance, instance, we know that this works. Therefore, if an asteroid ever comes our way, we know that the DART mission has proven that this can actually help us.
Thank God you people are around. So finally, during the week, there was a couple of Irish students got to chat with a real-life astronaut on the International Space Station. Yeah. How did they get on?
Oh, it was terrific. So, yeah, it happened at IIT Carlo, and I was there, actually. I was helping out, hosting it. And, yeah, we had a live link up by through NASA Mission Control with Matthias Maurer. So he's our European astronaut that's up there at the moment on his Cosmic Kiss mission. So he phoned in, and so Ireland, Germany and the Czech Republic had four students in these different places, and they each got to ask a question of Matthias and his mission. And it was terrific. And beforehand, we had a few things happening before the call and after. And before the call, I got to speak with Andreas Ort, who is a crew support engineer for Matthias. So what they do is they basically help the astronauts prepare for their mission. So they do lots of different things, like prepare their food items and all sorts of stuff.
Okay, well, I'm going to play just this little thing here, because one of the students, Harry Feeney, he asked a question and he got a brilliant answer from Matthias Maurer. Just take a listen.
Afternoon, sir. I'm Harry Feeney from Presentation College Carlow, and I would like to ask you, can you describe what it was like and how you felt the moment you saw Earth for the first time from the cupola on the ISS?
That's indeed a very emotional question. And, you know, when I arrived here on the station and I opened the shutters and then I looked outside down on planet Earth and I saw planet Earth fully blue. But then next to our planet, you see completely black, black night sky. What really fascinated me that I could see day and night in one. And it was such a striking emotion to be floating above Earth and seeing all this beauty below me. It's a moment that I will remember, I believe, for the rest of my life.
Yeah, and the quality of the line right there is much better than if you were next door. And if you as well. And you, by the way, you're a bit of a jet setter these days. Carlo one day, New Mexico the next. Just tell me very briefly in about 50 seconds. What are you up to?
I'm here. I came here just to see friends for Thanksgiving. But this part of the world is like there's so many space things going on. So I just swung by the VLA. Like, I'm a massive, you know, I loved that movie Contact. So we got to see the very large array, which is very impressive, by the way. It's really, really impressive. I'm going to go to Biosphere 2, and I'm trying to nearly kind of have guaranteed that I'm going to get to check out Spaceport during the week. But so Spaceport is this new port where, you know, Virgin Galactic had their suborbital flight there with Richard Branson on board there back in June. Yeah. So so there's a lot of things going on here all the time.
And will you be home for Christmas, Niamh?
You have to come home for Christmas. I'll be home for Christmas. Yeah, you're not allowed. You're not allowed when you're from Ireland. So
Niamh Shaw,
home.
Who is, better take a deep breath again, engineer, performer, writer, doctor of science, and all-round space note. Niamh, have a good time in New Mexico, and thanks a million for talking to us on the programme again today. Good luck.
Bye.
Take it easy.
Dave Fanning, weekends on 2FM.